Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal newspaper dated Wednesday, August the 3rd. I'm your reader, Kevin Boucher. Headline: State okays $225,000 settlement with black Iowa judge who asserted her firing was due to race. And this article was written by Aaron Murphy of the Journal's Des Moines Bureau. A black administrative judge in Iowa who asserted that she was fired in 2017 because of her race, and after successfully suing the state, is in the process of being reinstated and has also agreed to a $225,000 settlement with the state. State Appeals Board approved the settlement with Renee Snitzer of Cedar Rapids at its regular meeting on Monday. Snitzer had been working for 10 years as an administrative law judge for the Iowa Department of Corrections, Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Coralville, when, in 2017, she was fired for not adhering to a supervisor's orders, according to court documents. Now, Snitzer challenged her firing, saying that she faced discrimination, and she said she was fired because of her race. In April, an administrative law judge ruled the state corrections department did not prove just cause for her firing and ordered that she be reinstated with back pay. The Iowa Public Employment Relations Board concurred with and adopted the judge's findings, and they also ordered the state to reinstate Snitzer. In late July, the parties agreed to $225,000 in settlement. Roughly $134,000 will go to Snitzer, with the remaining $91,000 going to her attorneys. And according to the terms of the settlement, detailed in a July 22 letter from the Iowa Attorney General's Office to the State Appeal Board, this agreement is not to be construed as an admission of liability or wrongdoing on the part of the state or the parties named in the lawsuit. The appeal board approved the settlement without discussion on Monday. According to court documents, the corrections department's general counsel and Inspector General Michael Savala fired Snitzer in 2017, alleging that she, quote, contained and continued to disregard multiple supervisory directives. Snitzer responded during a department investigation conducted by Savala and later in court documents that Savala's actions were harassing, discriminatory, and retaliatory. And the headline for this next article: 5 more years. Sioux City Council votes 4-1 to extend management agreement for Tyson and Orpheum. And this story was written by reporter Dolly Butts. The Sioux City Council, in a split decision on Monday, voted to extend the city's current agreement with OVG360, formerly Spectra, for the management and operation of the Tyson Events Center and Orpheum Theater for a duration of 5 years and potentially another 5 years after that. The vote was 4-1, with Mayor Bob Scott casting the lone no vote. Scott said that he does not think OVG360 has performed as well as it should, especially when it comes to booking major concerts at the Tyson Center. What they told us when they took over was that the concerts would be easier for them than anyone else because they have such a huge portfolio of arenas that would be able to hook a concert going from somewhere, Scott said. Now, all of a sudden, the venue size is a big problem, but the venue size didn't change. The 10,000-seat Tyson Arena has been owned and run by the city since it opened in 2003, and the Orpheum is independently owned and jointly operated with the city. Before the vote, Rick Hauntz, OVG360's regional vice president told the council that the full-service venue management and event programming company fulfilled its main promise of reducing the operating deficit at the Tyson Event Center. And he said they did that by improving operational efficiencies, driving revenue by increased attendance and sponsorships, and an aggressive approach to booking quality and diversified events. According to OVG360, the company has saved the city of Sioux City over $1.1 million during its 4 years, compared to the last city-managed year. We got it down to almost half of what it was when we took over, and the trend is going to be decreasing that deficit even further, Hunts said. And that was our number one thing that we promised you guys, to lessen the taxpayer burden, and we've accomplished that. The existing agreement with OVG360 was set to expire on June 30th of 2023. Spectra took over booking, marketing, staffing, and even the food and beverage service at the Tyson and Orpheum Theaters on January 1, 2018, after the council voted to privatize the Tyson Center's operations. Dave Bernstein, president of the Orpheum's board, told Hans and OVG360's Tim Savona, general manager of the Tyson Event Center, that the board is, quote, very pleased with the job that the company has done. And if the council had not made the move to privatize operations, he said the Tyson's numbers in 2020 and 2021 would have been, quote, disastrous. I think everybody would love to see one or two major concerts at the arena every year, he said. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore asked Savona what OVG360 can do to increase concerts that appeal to the sponsors and the suite holders. And Savona told him that relationships, money, size of venue, and historical ticket sales all matter in booking shows. He noted that getting acts will continue to be a challenge, as the Sioux City market has to wait its turn for acts to circle back to its size and level of venue. Going into COVID, we were hot. We had over 10 concerts in about a 15-month span. Now, we're coming back from that. We had a great show in October with Sublime, and we had a great show with Gabriel Iglesias, who drew 6,000 people, Savona said. And over the next 60 to 70 days, we have two more concerts. We have two set to go next year. Councilman Alex Waters said the subsidy played a role in his vote, as well as the content being brought to the Tyson and the Orpheum, which he describes as a diverse range of offerings. I appreciate your Herculean efforts, especially during the middle of COVID. What we were able to do, what you and your team were able to accomplish, was really impressive. And you continue to chip away at that subsidy. And I think this year looks like it's going to be the brightest years yet, he said. In addition to improving the extension to the management agreement, the council voted 4-1 to extend the food and beverage agreement with OVG Hospitality, which also expires on June 30th of 2023, and they voted to extend that for another 5 years with potentially five more years beyond that extension. Mayor Scott also voted no on that item, by the way. In February, Oakview Group announced that it had rebranded its OVG Facilities Division and its Spectra acquisition of OVG360, OVG acquired Spectra in November of 2021. And the headline for this next article, Sioux City Police Chief worries about allowing ATVs and UTVs on city streets. This article was written by reporter Dolly Butts. Sioux City Police Chief Rex Mueller told City Council members on Monday during a presentation that the negatives associated with allowing ATVs and UTVs on city streets far outweigh the positives. At the council's July 25th meeting, Gerald Collins, who lives in the Riverside neighborhood, asked them to consider adopting an ordinance that would allow all-terrain vehicles and utility terrain vehicles to be legally driven on some city streets within the city limits. Collins said he wants to do that so he can ride from his residence in Riverside to his part-time job in South Dakota. Now, currently, the city of Sioux City, Iowa, does not have an ordinance that either will restrict or allow ATV, UTV usage on city streets beyond what is indicated in a new state law which went into effect on July 1st. The new law legalized the use of ATVs and UTVs on a limited number of roadways in Iowa. Cities are allowed to regulate the operation of such vehicles on two-lane primary and secondary road extensions. ATVs and UTVs can only be used on the following roads within Sioux City limits, and these roads are K-29, the old Lakeport Road south of DeRocher Path, D-18 Correctional Road east of Camp High Hopes, and D-25, Old Highway 141, southeast of the entrance to the cemetery. According to Chief Mueller, such ATVs and UTVs are not necessarily designed to operate on roads. He says that a lot of ATVs and UTVs in the low and mid-trim levels are missing rear view and side view mirrors, horns, tail lights, and blinkers. Although these items can be purchased as aftermarket accessories, and he also says he thinks loud noises associated with these vehicles will drive public complaints. ATVs and UTVs are not manufactured to go on the highway, he says. They have smaller displacement engines that rev higher, and due to their size considerations, the manufacturers have to make everything smaller. A lot of these vehicles have exposed engines, which creates additional noise issues. Chief Mueller said the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which refers to vehicles as OHF, off-highway vehicles, recommends that they, quote, not go on roadways. From 2016 to 2018, there's 2,211 deaths on OHVs, which includes all-terrain vehicles, and nearly 300 of those deaths were among children under the age of 16, Mueller said. And my fear is that a lot of these owners or parents that have these will look at these not as motor vehicles. It's easy to toss the keys to somebody who is a less experienced driver, which would potentially lead to issues if they interact with regular car-sized traffic. Resident Brad Lepper voiced opposition to legalizing such vehicles on city streets. He said he caught some individuals on ATVs doing donuts in his yard. We had issues with them driving through when my children were out there, he said. We literally called the police. We had them pulling up through the property, meeting an officer head-on, turning around and taking off and running from the police. And the police are not able to pursue them out of safety concerns. Collins, who had also attended the meeting, said that he agreed with Mueller's safety concerns, but he said his off-road vehicle has a roll cage, safety harness, headlights, tail lights, turn signals, and a horn. Many people who have these machines are, I would say, mature, qualified people, he said. And so I do think by having these vehicles all in one category, it's very difficult for the city to allow them. I get it. Operating an ATV or UTV on streets where the vehicles are not permitted carries a fine of $70. ATVs and UTVs also cannot be used on highways greater than two lanes, regardless of location in the city or the county. And individuals who choose to drive ATVs or UTVs on approved roadways must be at least 18 and have financial liability coverage in effect for the vehicle and carry proof of insurance They are also required to have such a vehicle's headlamps lit while operating it on a highway, according to state of Iowa law. Headline: 29-year-old Sioux City man gets 5 years in prison for smoking weed with a minor. This story was written by reporter Nick Hytrek. A Sioux City man was sentenced Friday to 5 years in prison for smoking marijuana several times with a female minor. Oscar Gomez, 29, pleaded guilty in Woodbury County District Court to one count of delivery of a controlled substance, a Class D felony. Gomez was charged with smoking marijuana with a 14-year-old girl and getting her high numerous times from November 1st to January 31st while he lived at a home in the 1500 block of Collins Street. When police met with Gomez on May the 16th, he admitted sharing marijuana with the girl several times in order to get her to talk, because he was a parent figure or a caretaker to her, court documents said. Headline: ex-mobile home park manager in Sioux City gets 5 years probation for stealing rental payments, and he was ordered to pay $28,082. This story was written by reporter Nick Hytrek. The former manager of a Sioux City mobile home park has been placed on probation for stealing thousands of dollars in rental payments. Vicky Corio, 46, of Sioux City, had pleaded guilty in Woodbury County District Court in March to one count of second-degree theft, which was reduced from first-degree theft as a part of a plea agreement. Following the terms of the plea agreement, District Judge Zachary Heineman suspended a 5-year prison sentence and placed Corio on probation instead for 5 years. She must pay $28,082 in restitution to Regency of Iowa, which owns the Regency of Sioux City Mobile Home Park at 4101 Gordon Drive. 5 counts of forgery were dismissed as a part of the agreement. In her guilty plea, Corio admitted that from February 1, 2020 through December 6 of 2020, while she was employed as the manager of the mobile home park, she rented lots without informing Regency, then collected rental payments and kept the money herself. During that time, court documents said Corio deposited or cashed 38 money orders from tenants into her own personal bank account. And the headline for this article: arrest has been made in Sioux City shots fired case. And this story was written by reporter Nick Hytrek. Police have arrested a suspect in a June incident in which shots were fired near a Sioux City park. Aiden Wabashaw, 19, of Sioux City, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail Monday on charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, and a felon in possession of a dangerous weapon. His bond was set at $40,000. Wabashaw is accused of threatening a 17-year-old girl with a handgun and firing shots at her during an altercation that began June the 12th and continued into the early morning hours of June 13th in the 1000 block of 15th Street near Dale Street Park. And hours later, a Sioux City police officer stopped Wabashaw for failing to stop at a stop sign. After Wabashaw consented to a search of his vehicle, police found a 9mm handgun inside a bag, and Wabashaw admitted it was his. Wabashaw was on probation for a July 2021 conviction of 3 counts of second-degree robbery. And the headline for this article: 5-plus years in federal prison for Sioux City woman who pled guilty to selling more than 20 pounds of meth. A woman who sold more than 20 pounds of methamphetamine in the Sioux City area has been sentenced to spend more than 5 years in federal prison. Abby Brinkman, 34 of Sioux City, pleaded guilty in federal court in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine. She was sentenced on July the 15th to 64 months in prison. According to the United States Attorney's Office, Brinkman was arrested on September 29th while picking up a 5-pound package of meth that had been delivered by the U.S. Postal Service from her California supplier. Authorities seized another pound and a half of meth from her vehicle and more than $22,000 in cash found in her home. Brinkman admitted that during the previous months, she had received several packages of meth from California and had sold it to others. And the headline for this next article, motorcyclist killed in Sarpy County crash involving a truck. And this was written by the Omaha World Herald newspaper. A motorcyclist was killed early Friday in a crash in Sarpy County. The crash took place shortly before 7 a.m. just west of 36th Street on Platteview Road, said Sarpy County Sheriff's Lieutenant Jacob Bettsworth. In a news release, the department said a westbound F-350 driven by Gerard Morrow, 37, of Bellevue, collided with an eastbound motorcycle driven by Alan Patton of Omaha. Patton died at the scene, Bettsworth said. Morrow was not injured. Headline for this next article, women dies, four others injured in a crash in Saunders County. One woman died and four other people were seriously injured in a four-vehicle crash Sunday just south of Fremont. The crash occurred about 1:30 p.m. on U.S. 77 between Nebraska 109 and the Platte River Bridge, according to the Saunders County Sheriff's Office. Investigators determined that a 2020 Mazda was northbound on U.S. 77 and a 2006 Kia Sorento was southbound. Both vehicles, quote, drifted toward the center of the highway and collided, the sheriff's office said. The collision caused the Mazda to veer into the southbound lanes and caused a secondary collision with a southbound 2012 Ford Kia Forte. In addition, the Sorento veered into the northbound lane and collided with a 2017 Ford F-250 pickup truck. A woman in the Mazda and two occupants of the Sorento were flown by medical helicopter to the Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha, where the woman, who was in the Mazda, died from her injuries. Multiple people had to be cut out of the vehicles, officials said, and the driver of the Forte and the F-250 were taken to a Fremont hospital for treatment. And the headline for this next article, officer shot man who was entering a home with a knife, Fremont police said. The Fremont Police Department said an officer shot a 34-year-old man who allegedly had fled from the Nebraska Department of Corrections and then entered a home with a knife early Saturday morning. Officers received a call at 3 a.m. and were told the caller's husband, armed with a knife, was at the front door, attempting to get into the home, police said in a news release. The caller said the man was mentally unstable. The caller was hiding in the home with several children and feared the man, police said. Police officers arrived on the scene and confronted the man, who was on the front porch and armed with a knife. Officers gave him verbal commands. And as the man entered the home, police said, one officer fired a shot that hit the man in the abdomen. Fremont rescue personnel were called. The man was transported to Methodist Fremont Health and then flown by medical helicopter to the Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha, where he underwent surgery. Police say that the man's wife and children were unharmed. The Fremont Police Department has requested that the Nebraska State Patrol investigate the shooting, since it involves a police officer in the line of duty. And the headline for this next article, United States Department of Agriculture is getting tougher on salmonella in chicken. This article was written by David Pitt of the Associated Press in Des Moines. The federal government on Monday announced proposed new regulations that would force food processors to reduce the amount of salmonella bacteria found in some raw chicken products or risk being shut down. The proposed U.S. Department of Agriculture rules would declare salmonella an adulterate, which is a contaminant that can cause foodborne illness in breaded and stuffed raw chicken products. Now, that includes many frozen foods found in grocery stores, including chicken cordon bleu and chicken Kyiv products that appear to be cooked through but are only heat-treated to set the batter or breading. The agency notified producers of the proposed changes on Friday. USDA Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety Sandra Eskin said it marks the beginning of a broader agency effort to curtail illnesses caused by the salmonella bacteria, which sickens 1.3 million Americans each year. In addition, salmonella sends more than 26,000 of them to the hospital and is responsible for 420 deaths every year. And those numbers are according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Food is the source for most of those illnesses. And the CDC says approximately one in every 25 packages of chicken sold at grocery stores contains salmonella bacteria. And the headline for this article, City Council adopts Hamilton Boulevard plans. This story was written by reporter Dolly Butts. By voting in favor of its consent agenda on Monday, the Sioux City Council adopted plans, specifications, form of contract, and estimated cost for the construction of the Hamilton Boulevard paving improvement projects. The project has two sites, Hamilton Boulevard and West 3rd Street, which includes the installation of a new paved median. City staff is ready to advertise the notice to bidders today. A public hearing will then be held on the 15th of August, and the bids will be received the following day. Site 1 will be completed within 5 working days, or 50 working days, I should say, which is anticipated to be in November. Site 2 will be completed within 25 working days, and that job, officials say, is expected to be completed in June of 2023. This project is funded using transfers in water funds, sewer funds, sales tax infrastructure, and general obligation bonds. It has a balance of $411,222, and the engineer's opinion of probable construction cost for the work is $390,000. And the headline for this next article, University of Iowa physicians pay $600,000 to settle suit. Iowa City, Iowa. University of Iowa physicians, a medical and surgical group based in the Carver College of Medicine, has agreed to pay $600,000 to settle a lawsuit brought by the North Liberty wife of a patient who died in August 2015 of complications from a metastatic neuroendocrine tumor. Kathy Pierce brought a $2.5 million claim to the State Appeal Board on August 7th of 2017, accusing U of I hospitals and clinics of negligence. The state denied it a year later, causing her to sue December 26th of 2018. In the lawsuit, Pierce said that the tumor in her husband Chris's right abdomen, with metastasis to the liver and over time spread to the spine and his right eye. He participated in a clinical trial in 2013, shrinking some of the lesions, according to his suit. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal newspaper, dated Wednesday, August the 3rd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now let's turn to today's obituaries. Paul J. Grouse of Sioux City, 92 years old, passed away on Thursday, July 28th, at a local hospital. Paul was born on June 25th, 1930, at home in Osmond, Nebraska, to Joseph and Martha McGee Grouse. He nearly completed high school but was forced to leave his senior year due to his father passing away, and Paul took over the family farming business. He married Ann Arnett on October 27, 1952 in Bronson, Iowa. Paul is survived by children Linda Olson, her husband Mike of Sioux City, Marcia Draymond of Warrenton, Missouri, David Grouse and his wife Cindy of Sioux City, Vicky Grouse of Sioux City, and James Grouse and his wife of Clairton, Iowa. Siblings Dora Boggs of Sergeant Bluff, Joe Grouse of Vermilion, South Dakota, Gary Grouse and his wife Mary of Sioux City, and Jerry Grouse and his wife Dolly of Sargent, Nebraska. Daughter-in-law, Connie Grouse of Bismarck, North Dakota. Two brothers-in-law, Elgert Arnett and his wife Marion of Sioux City, and Ronald Arnett and his wife Nancy of Shakopee, Minnesota. He is also survived by 16 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, 3 step-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. Paul was preceded in death by his parents, wife Anne, in March of 2008, son Timothy, daughter Teresa, and 2 brothers, Bob and Roy. Billie Jean Jensen of Sioux City, 68 years old, passed away on Friday, December 31st, 2021, and again the name is Billie Dean Jensen, and celebration of life will be at 10:30 a.m. this coming Saturday, August 6th, at Meyer Brother Colonial Chapel, 3220 Stone Park Boulevard. Burial will be at a later date at Memorial Park Cemetery. Billy was born on May 19, 1953 in Sioux City. He was born a twin to Bettie Jean. She passed away 3 days after her birth. They were born to Bill and Doris Christie Jensen. Billy was born with cerebral palsy, and he went to live at Glenwood State Hospital when he was a toddler. He returned to Sioux City when Courage Homes opened and was a resident there until his passing. He loved his home and his family there. He is survived by his brother, Ed, and Marie Jensen of Fair Oaks, California. Sisters Barb Becker of Sioux City, Kathy and Jim Mincer of Sioux City, and Sandy and Dan Slate of Seaford, Delaware, aunt and uncle Bernice and Bob Donovan of Hawaiian Gardens, California, several nieces and nephews, and 2 great-nephews. He was preceded in death by his father, Bill Jensen, on November 1, 1987, Mother Doris and Christy Jensen on June 28, 2020, and a twin sister, Bettie Jean, on May 21, 1953. We would like to say a very special thanks to everyone at Courage Home for all the love, guidance, and gentle care provided to Billy. Also, a special thank you to the ICU nursing staff at Mercy One for the excellent care that Billy received there. Judith M. Judy Belt, 72 years old, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away on Thursday, July 28th at University Medical Center in Omaha, Nebraska. She was born on April 12, 1950 in Pender, Nebraska, to Perry and Marie Davenport Tompkins. After high school, she went on to attend college, and she began her career as an accountant. Judy also worked as a buyer and seller for grain commodities before retiring in 2015. She was united in marriage to Darrell Belt on December 27, 1969, and together they enjoyed camping, taking care of the farm and livestock, and spending time with grandchildren. Judy also enjoyed gardening, flowers, and doing ceramics and painting. She is survived by her husband, Darrell Belt of Sergeant Bluff, children Brian and Carrie Belt of Indianola, Iowa, and Tiffany and Carrie Himes of Lincoln, Nebraska. She's also survived by grandchildren Peyton, Cooper, Zoe, Tenley, Tatum, and Kaler, and siblings Gloria Bly, Jane Kinman, Elaine Rasmussen, Bonnie Schmidt, Perry Tompkins, Fritz Tompkins, and Bill Tompkins. She was preceded in death by her parents. Charles Edward Ham, M.D., passed away on Saturday, July 16th at the Kingsley, Iowa Specialty Care Center following a nearly 20-year battle with Parkinson's disease. And visitation with the family will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at the Road Funeral Home in Kingsley. And again, that's Thursday, August 4th. And the service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, August 5th at Central Baptist Church, 4001 Indian Hills Drive in Sioux City. Charles was born December 18, 1934, in Beatrice, Nebraska, to Henry and Anna Jansen Ham, first-generation Mennonites whose parents emigrated to the United States from Prussia. Charles grew up in rural Gage County, Nebraska. Charles attended country schools and graduated from DeWitt, Nebraska High School in 1951. Charles completed his pre-med studies at Bethel College in North Newton, Kansas, graduating with a degree in biology in 1955. Following graduation from Bethel, he moved to Omaha, Nebraska, and began working as an orderly at the old Lutheran Hospital with plans to fulfill his dream of becoming a medical doctor. While working at Lutheran Hospital, Charles met Virginia Stevenson, a candy striper also working at the hospital. They were married on January 11, 1957, at the Grace Baptist Church in Omaha. Charles's faith in the Lord Jesus framed his entire career. In his care for his patients, his friendships, his church, or his family, God was always at the center. Charles was preceded in death by his beloved wife of 58 years, Virginia, parents, five brothers, and four sisters-in-law, Alfred and Rachel Udland of Brainerd, Minnesota, Gerhard and Velma Ham of Paso Robles, California, also preceded in death by Donald and Miriam Glanzer of Bridgewater, South Dakota, Henry Jr. of Centralia, Washington, and Harold and Letha Epp of Beatrice, Nebraska. He was also preceded in death by two nephews, Ben Ham and Alan Ham. Tax-deductible memorial contributions and donations may be given to the Charles and Virginia Ham Legacy Fund for God's glory and to expand His kingdom by making your check out to the Waterstone Foundation and in the memo line writing CVH Legacy Fund 136132. Donations will then be distributed to Charles and Virginia's selected local and global Christian charity organizations. And a special and heartfelt thank you goes to the nurses, the staff, and the administration of the Care Center for your many years of kind and tireless care for Dr. Ham. We know he appreciated each and every one of you. And now turning to the opinion page of the Sioux City Journal newspaper. Headline, Our Opinion, Keep ATVs and UTVs Off of Sioux City's Streets. And this opinion piece was written by newspaper reporter Dolly Butts. A new state law, in effect, allows all-terrain and off-road utility vehicles to legally travel on more roadways in Iowa, giving ATV and UTV operators greater freedom in rural areas makes perfect sense. But we hope that the Sioux City Council slams the brakes on request to permit the recreational vehicles on city streets. Under the new law, which took effect on July 1st, ATVs and UTVs are now allowed on all county roads in Iowa if they abide by a speed limit of 35 miles an hour. The vehicles, though, are still prohibited on state highways or any roadway with more than two lanes. They can now cross non-interstate two-lane highways that serve as the most direct and accessible route between the operator's home and a secondary road of city street in which vehicles are authorized, or an ATV park or trail. Now, individual cities have the option of allowing ATVs and UTVs on their streets. This new state law immediately allowed ATVs and UTVs on three county roads within the city of Sioux City. They are K-29, Old Lakeport Road, south of DeRocher Path, County Road D-18, Correctionville Road, east of Camp High Hope, and County Road D-25, Old Highway 141, southeast of the entrance to the cemetery. That's according to police. The vehicles will remain prohibited elsewhere in the city as long as the city council does not pass an ordinance with more exceptions. Four-lane city streets like Hamilton Boulevard, Morningside Avenue, South Lakeport Street, and Floyd Boulevard remain ATV and UTV free under provisions in the new law, but some of the owners are also pushing their bid to drive their vehicles on at least some other city streets. I would just like to ride from my residence to basically where I have a part-time job, which is over in South Dakota. That's according to Gerald Collins, who lives in the Riverside neighborhood, and he told the city council at a recent meeting. I'm talking 6 to 8 blocks in a residential area, not running on and tearing up city parks. While we understand the desire, like owners like Collins, to make it easier to get around town on their recreational vehicles, we also agree with Mayor Bob Scott that it would be a mistake to allow ATVs and UTVs on most every eligible street. We come down on the side of safety. Now, although we would expect the vast majority of ATV and UTV owners would act responsibly, we also would worry about the few miscreants who would take their vehicles off-road, potentially tearing up grassy areas in public parks and other areas. Overall, allowing ATVs and UTVs in more areas likely would create an enforcement headache for police, something Scott alluded to at the recent council meeting. The mayor mentioned that he recently returned from South Dakota's Black Hills, where he said, quote, ATVs and UTVs are running everywhere. And the problem I've got is half of them didn't appear to have licenses on them, which would be illegal. Now, that's going to be a bigger enforcement issue. To legally drive on approved roadways, drivers must be at least 18 and have financial liability coverage in effect for the vehicle and carry proof of insurance. And so we fear that many younger drivers, younger than 18 years old, would hop on a recreational vehicle. And if we think police have higher priorities than to check legions of ATVs and UTVs to see if they're properly licensed and the drivers are old enough. And so taking a ride on an ATV or UTV is undoubtedly a fun-filled activity. But I would be better off if it took place on roadways more suited for them. And continuing with the opinion page of the Sioux City Journal newspaper, here is another letter to the editor with the headline, GOP lawmakers vote no on modest gun reforms. Here are some of the recent bills that they've rejected. June 8, Protecting Our Kids Act would, among other things, raise the legal age to buy certain military-grade weapons from 18 to 21. All Iowa GOP House members voted no. Why? Well, they say it would be a threat to God-given rights. On June 23rd, the Active Shooter Amber Alert Act would create an Amber Alert-style system for active shooter incidents. Iowa's House GOP contingent also voted no on this act. June 24th, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, although modest, it's the first major overhaul of gun regulations since the 1994 federal assault weapons ban. Now, that assault weapons ban, though, expired in 2004. Senator Chuck Grassley voted no because about concerns about constitutional rights. It is obvious to the 80 to 90% of Americans who at least support universal background checks that the worn-out shield of God-given rights and constitutional guarantees has become a fig leaf. Meanwhile, Iowa has seen two multiple casualty shootings in as many months. How many innocent lives must be sacrificed on the altar of the Second Amendment? Are 10 in Buffalo, 21 in Uvalde, and 7 in Highland Park not enough? Or the additional 353 mass shootings in this nation through the first weeks of July? And this was written, this letter to the editor, was written by Karen Heidman of Sioux City, Iowa. And continuing with the opinion page, here is a regular opinion column with a headline, Rivers Run Through It. And this was written by Anne Vandemortel. By thy rivers gently flowing, Illinois, Illinois. When I learned the words to the Illinois State song, I thought it was written specifically about the Quad Cities. Growing up in Moline, I had the Mississippi River to the north and the Rock to the south. So it was logical to believe the songwriter had my hometown in mind, right? My parents explained that even though we enter a new state, when we cross the Mississippi into Iowa at Bettendorf and Davenport from Moline and Rock Island, it does not mean that every time we cross a river we are now in a new state. I always consider the Rock River the lesser river, as it empties into the Mississippi and was lesser known. But as an adult, I have come to appreciate the charm and loveliness of the Rock. Originally named Sinisippi, meaning rocky waters. Driving alongside as it meanders its way from Wisconsin to Rock Island is soul-soothing. I love to drive Illinois too, following the curves of the river through quaint towns and luscious green tides while watching the sun glisten on the rippling water which parts to go around tree-covered islands. The Mississippi River causes confusion for all who travel here, with the river running east to west. Instead of north to south, their orientation becomes skewed. In fact, I had a friend who lived on the river north of here. It's been years since she moved away from a home where she could hear the lapping of water upon the shore of her bedroom window. But when she comes to town, she is still drawn to the river. We visit it, and we sit on a dock so she can dangle her feet to feel the force of the flowing water that energizes her spirit. She is happy to have a serene fishing pond on her farm, but misses the life force that comes from a river. And I think she relates to what Langston Hughes so eloquently stated about knowing what rivers have done for him. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like rivers. And the headline for this next letter to the editor, it says, Support Efforts to Preserve Monarch Butterflies. And this letter was written by Jake Jungers of Sioux City, Iowa. And he writes, It was recently announced that the International Union for the Conservation of Nature has added monarch butterflies to its red list of threatened species and is labeled as endangered because of its dwindling population in North America. And so now more than ever, it's important to help support the culture of growth for these beautiful creatures. Support the Dorothy Picott Nature Center and conservation efforts all across the great state of Iowa. Let's set an example and lead the pack, all while supporting the beautification of our natural resources. And so the next time you see a monarch butterfly, think of it as a reminder to stop and smell the roses and enjoy the gift of life. And this next article from the opinion page is by Cal Thomas, To ID or Not to ID in America. During recent election seasons, there's been a big debate over whether a voter must present an identification card to cast a ballot, and if so, what type. Congressional Democrats are considering legislation that would provide secure identification cards not to U.S. citizens for the purpose of voting, but to those who crossed our southern border in violation of our immigration laws, which the Biden administration has mostly refused to enforce. Now, supporters say the cards for immigrants would make it easier, among other things, for them to access benefits, meaning U.S. taxpayers will foot the bill. Taxpayer dollars are already going to nonprofits working at the border, which kind of amounts to a kind of abetting and abating lawmakers in our upside-down legal system where lawbreakers are often treated better than law abiders. ID cards can only encourage more people to come to America, where they can count on free stuff and other goodies normally reserved for United States citizens. And turning now quickly to the sports section. Headline, former teammates add juice to one Hawkeye game. And this article was written by reporter Steve Batterson. When Iowa visits Purdue in football in early November, the Hawkeye defenders expected to be lining up across from the other team will face a familiar foe. Former Hawkeye receivers Tyrone Tracy Jr. and Charlie Jones are expected to fill important roles for the Boilermakers after transferring from Iowa. And of course, since we are into August, August 3rd, it's kind of hard to believe, but football season is about a month away. The Iowa Hawkeyes football schedule, they will play host to South Dakota State the first game of the season, September 3rd. Then September the 10th, another home game, as the Iowa Hawkeyes will host Iowa State. Then another home game on September the 17th, Iowa will play Nevada. Well, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal newspaper dated Wednesday, August the 3rd. And a reminder, you can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.